Ask me if there'll come a time when I grow tired of you. Never my love. Never my love.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. This is Reservations, and I'm Rain Whalen.
And I'm the Greasy Strangler.
Is that from something?
Yeah, so there's a movie called The Greasy Strangler. It's this very, very, very strange, dark comedy horror. And Sky Elobar is in it, and he is the bookstore clerk in the movie we're talking about today. And it's super obscure. If you have to, I've started it a couple of times, and it's just too weird and too gross. And I'm like, I can't handle it right now. I need to take it aside, and we'll pick it back up later. And I just never pick it back up later. So,
just almost exactly like with our Tragedy of Macbeth episode, except it kind of forced me to finish that movie.
Well, with The Greasy Strangler, I mean, it's how it sounds, you know. it's such an odd, it's very off-putting, I'll tell you that. I mean, it's something else. So
Jeremy, did you know it's illegal to say I want to kill the president of the United States of America?
Shout out to Trevor Moore.
If anyone has never seen that skit, it is absolutely hysterical. Showing Ashley, I showed her that video before we got started, and she was like, okay, this is just falling apart. And I'm, of course, laughing the whole time. She's like, it's gone on too long now. It's not funny anymore. And I was just like, oh, okay. Shout out to Trevor Moore, RIP.
Yeah.
He will forever be missed. So Jeremy, before we get going, so I wanted to let you know, and I'm going to pull it off the shelf because I'm going to show the camera before Future Rain puts up the picture of it. So after I finished our episode that we're doing today, I tried to start watching my new movie, The Souvenir, because I was really excited to watch it, just because it's a very interesting concept. Shit, hang on. I'm not gonna put it on the shelf right now. I'll do it later. I just think it's a very interesting concept, just because it's semi autobiographical from the writer director of the film, Joanna Hogg. I think it's Hogg, H-O-G-G. And essentially just her experience in film school in England. And I started the movie last night, but it was really, really late because I was up really late watching the movie we were doing today, as well as trying to find videos to help me understand this movie.
Sure.
And also doing laundry. And by the time I popped this in, it was already like 1 a.m. And I was like, you know, how long is it? You know, maybe I could crank it out really quick. It's 2 hours long. And I was like, I can't make it. But what of the like 15 minutes I watched, it's gorgeously shot. Mm-hmm. I love the aspect ratio. Mm-hmm. And so it makes me even more excited because I knew nothing about it. It was a free gift from A24 because I'm an A24 member, and they do a free birthday gift. And so maybe I might watch it on Wednesday when I'm off both parts, because there's two parts, and then I'll let you know.
I was really interested in seeing her newest film, The Eternal Daughter, with Tilda Swinton. I know Tilda Swinton's in The Souvenir as well. I was interested in that because it looks sort of like a gothic horror mystery sort of a thing. And I don't know. I guess I thought about it like a long time ago when I first saw like the promotional stuff, and then I haven't thought about it since. So when you showed me that, I looked it up and I saw, oh, The Eternal Daughter. I want to, or maybe that's not even the correct title. That's what I remember anyway.
I think you're right, because I think I was trying to figure out what else Joanna had done. But
sometimes I'll read stuff inside my head and then I'll say it out loud and they're like, no, that's not right. You've swapped words, or you've incorrectly pronounced it or whatever. So
no, you got it. No, The Eternal Daughter.
The Eternal Daughter. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it looks sort of cool and atmospheric, and sort of like that old, like kind of like The Innocence or something, like, or the 1960s The Haunting. It sort of gave those vibes, which I could be completely wrong about those vibes, but that's what I got from the promotional material. So so yeah, that's exciting.
And I really like the box art for it, you know, like for anyone watching the episode, you know, you can see my special edition The Green Knight up there, and they didn't do that for this one, as I just showed on camera. It's more of kind of like our Criterion digi books, which I don't know, it just kind of excited me even more that I got it for free.
For sure. Yeah,
the only thing that does slightly disappoint me is I also have the A24 app, and on the app you can buy their movies and watch them on the app. But if you've bought like a physical version, you get it for free. So like when I bought you for our movie trade off, when I bought you the 4K Midsummer, I have it for free. Nice. Like I could watch it for free, even though I never will, because
unbelievable. It's too good.
Well, see, I especially don't want to now, just because everyone else in our friend group loves it, especially my wife. So yeah. I'm like, I really don't want to watch it now. Anyway, but since I technically got that one for free, I didn't get the digital download for free. So I'm a little peeved by that.
Yeah.
But oh well.
What are you gonna do?
Oh yeah. What are you gonna do? So Jeremy, are you ready to talk about today's episode? Which I feel like will be. I feel like this will be an interesting one, considering before we got started, we both kind of shared a little bit of our thoughts on the movie. So if you didn't see last week, which, you know, I'm kind of disappointed because I felt like last week's episode was really, really good.
Agreed.
And
it's fine.
Only 10 of you have seen it. But anyway. If you didn't see last week, this week it is my pick. It is actually my final pick of the season because we are ramping up to the end. Today we are talking about the 2018 neo-noir dark comedy mystery thriller Under the Silver Lake. This was the first watch for the both of us, right?
Yes, kind of, with an asterisk. So when I turned it on Friday, I'd bought it years ago, I guess on iTunes or whatever. It must have been on sale. And so I turned it on and it was over an hour in. And I go, I don't remember this at all. You know, I don't remember watching this. I don't remember anything, right? And I'm like, that's weird. Let's restart and let's do this again, I guess. I guess technically I've seen a lot of it before, but I don't remember a thing about it.
Well, here, I'll give you the technicality since you don't remember anything. So,
I remember the now, but like that first watch, I had no clue, you know? And I can tell you why I was only just over an hour in, but but yeah, I don't remember that first watch at all. So this was technically first watch for me.
It was first watch. First impression, I liked it. Enjoy is kind of a, I wouldn't use enjoy, but I did like it, mainly because a lot of the videos, which I'll get into later on, a lot of the videos I watched really piqued my interest more than the movie actually did. That the fact that a lot of signs point to that there's still like an overarching mystery hidden within the movie. Which that I'm like, well, then I have to rewatch it. I want to solve this mystery. But on the whole, I liked it. I felt like Andrew Garfield played a very not likable character really well. I liked the mystery element to it, because as we've done several other noirs and neo-noirs on the podcast before, I like a good mystery. And so I was like, I was sold on the mystery, but I could see why people would think it was too confusing and too surreal. And you know, the whole time I was watching it, dude, I kind of thought about what I said for my tease about it maybe being sort of like Lynchian. And I felt like I was right. It did feel very Lynchian. But I was like, it doesn't work in this context. Like, I don't know if maybe it was just the execution, that maybe only Lynch is the one who can do Lynch. But I was like, the surrealism doesn't work. Like, it just, I think that would be the only thing about it that I didn't really like, per se.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like, I love mysteries. I love surrealism. I love puzzle box films. I love like getting to decode and deconstruct these films and try to figure out the puzzle and try to figure out the mystery. And even if it didn't solve it for me, that's okay because I can figure it out. Not this time. I don't give a shit. I did not like this movie. And it wasn't that, listen, I may perhaps find a better appreciation for it over time. That's not lost on me. I think there's always room for me to have a, you know, a change of heart over time. And that may happen this time. I don't know. But for right now, I don't like it. And I think it's for some of the reasons you just stated, like the pirate guy is such a Lynchian thing. And it just doesn't, you're right. It has no place here. I feel that it was confoundingly confusing, and I just, it wasn't fun. Like, it wasn't a fun mystery. Like, I wasn't like, I don't know who Sarah is, so why do I care if he finds her, right? It's like I have to be in the same mindset as Sam, right, who becomes obsessed, you know, with, you know, these women and, you know, these people that he's infatuated with. And I just don't, right. And I'm not. And, you know, he seems to have a very unhealthy relationship with women and he's, you know, misogynistic and he's an idiot and, you know, he's lazy and, you know, but he is also obsessive and, you know, and in this case, he's just either unlucky or very lucky, depending on how you want to put it, finding this conspiracy. And of course, this film is also like a critique on, you know, how we idolize people or how we see show business or how we view you know, film and what we take away from film and what we take away from music and, you know, separating art from artist. And, you know, that's not lost on me either. But to put it all together like this and then to have a mystery and like having ciphers and, you know, these hidden messages that are for the audience and not for the actual plot and, you know, the actual film portion of it and the story, it's just a mess. This movie's a mess.
Yeah. So because of that, would you like me to do the synopsis?
There's no way I could.
Okay. All right. I will do the best I can. It'll probably be the shortest.
Okay.
So everyone, So Under the Silver Lake, as Jeremy said, stars Andrew Garfield as Sam, our quote-unquote main character. And as we pretty much said, he's not the most likable person. He is lazy. He just kind of drifts through life. His rent is so past due that the film takes place in the 5 days he has to pay his rent before he is evicted. And he just kind of doesn't care until he meets Sarah, played by Riley Keough, who he becomes almost immediately infatuated with, and decides, after she mysteriously disappears, decides that he's going to try to find her and track her down. And all the while uncovering this conspiracy, because he himself is a conspiracy theorist. And so uncovering this conspiracy about the rich essentially pulling an Egyptian pharaoh and burying themselves with three wives. And that's Under the Silver Lake. That's it. That's all sure. You need to know.
No, that's good.
Oh, and yeah, and there's a dog killer on the loose. Who give? Like, I will say, that would be the other thing that upset me. Like, I want to know who that was. Well, don't just.
I think it's Sam.
Well, and we'll get there. I watched a video where they said that there is evidence that points to that it's Sam, but there's also evidence that says it's not Sam. Mm. So I don't know. I just wish there would have been some fucking answer, but.
I don't want to be just all negative all the time. So let's get some of the good out of the way.
Well, I was just about to say, would you like to start with the positive aspects about this?
Yeah, there are some. There are loads of homages to film. And these little, I don't know what you would call them besides homages, but so like there's Rear Window, there's Vertigo, there's Psycho, there's a James and the Giant Peach in there. There's 2001 A Space Odyssey, right? I mean, there's all of these little tributes to these films with these shots and how the scene, is constructed and blocked or whatever, laid out. Like the bunker he finds looks like where Dave ends up at the end of 2001, right? Him crawling through that tunnel to me looked like James and the Giant Peach when he is, crawling through the wormhole. In the
beach. Yeah. When you said James and the Giant Peach, was like, where?
That's what.
Then,
Of course, the voyeuristic stuff is very Rear Window. Him following the car with those girls. Is very Vertigo and whatever. So, or very Psycho-esque. And then of course, when he goes to that, stumbles upon, that screening, where Sydney Sweeney is, young Sydney Sweeney, they're leaning up against Hitchcock's grave, right? Or a grave that says Hitchcock on it. So that stuff I liked. I think Andrew Garfield was amazing. I thought he was awesome. He knows exactly what movie he's in, even though I don't. Right?
Yeah. There's a reason he agreed to do it.
I mean, he knows what he's doing. Jimmy Simpson, what a wonderful surprise. I think he is amazing.
Dude.
If we didn't sing his praises enough in our Zodiac episode, I'm pretty sure we did. At least I hope we did.
I'm pretty sure we did, yeah. You, me, and Alex. If no one's seen that episode, go listen to our Zodiac episode.
Yeah.
Jimmy Simpson's the best. Of course, my favorite with him is all his appearances on Psych. He's the best.
He's great. He's an amazing character actor. And in Westworld, he's also wonderful in Westworld. Topher Grace, another pleasant surprise.
Dude, when he came on screen, I looked over at Ashley and I said, "Is that fucking Topher Grace?" And then I got like a little closer to the screen. I was like, "That's fucking Topher Grace."
Ricky Lindholm, who some of you would know as Garfunkel or Oates. I don't
know which.
She's amazing.
I think also, she's Garfunkel.
Is she Garfunkel? Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Sidebar, when that whole scene transpired of them having sex, what's really funny is earlier that night, Ashley and I were having dinner. No, we were having like a late kind of like lunch, and we were watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and we got to the episode with the Swedes with her and Anders Holm. And I was like, isn't it funny? Like, we just watched her pretend to be a Swedish person, and now she's getting like plowed by Andrew Garfield.
Yeah. So, I mean, she was a pleasant surprise. And Patrick Fischler, who was the guy who writes the comic books with all the death masks on the wall, at least the reasonable death masks.
No, they were life masks.
Life masks.
I said death masks too. I was like, I looked over at Ash. She's like, this weirdo's got death masks. And then the movie goes, yeah, these are life masks.
I guess that makes sense because they're alive, right?
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. But yeah, you know, the performances were great. Riley Coe, you know, she's great. But overall, you know, the movie is a mess for me, right? Like, again, I understand the sort of the underbelly of Hollywood and that it's not all glitz and glamour. You know, that's, I think that's been done enough to where, you know, I think it's been done better. Right.
Yeah. I agree.
Where this was sort of like, you know, I get it, but it also seems like an otherworldly place, right? Like, where Sam is walking in that neighborhood and he sees all of these women who look the same. And they're just there for an audition, right?
Audition. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is sort of seedy and, you know, kind of gross. And I saw a lot of critiques saying that it's part of the movie is, you know, saying that these awful things that are happening in Hollywood are just being ignored. They're not being hidden, right? Which I get. Right. Like that's, I understand that. But then they're like, well, you know, it's the Weinstein stuff and it's the, you know, the Epstein stuff. But then I'm like, that happened after the movie was made. Right. Like when all that stuff came out in the light.
Yeah.
What I mean, like when it became wide public knowledge. So I don't know. Right. Because it was made in like 2015, 2016. And then, you know, when the Me Too stuff happened and when the Weinstein allegations and, you know, confirmations came out. And then, of course, with Epstein, that was afterward. So I don't think that was the response. And of course, David Robert Mitchell worked with the Weinstein company for It Follows. So they're saying that maybe it was a critique on that. And maybe they're right.
I saw the same video where they said that it's, you know, they were like, you know, it's not a confirmed thing, but it makes, you know, it all lines up. And I was like, yeah, that is interesting. But even the video I watched said the same thing you just said, like all the confirmations were after the movie had come out. So unless David Mitchell Robert, that's his name, right? David Robert Mitchell.
Yeah.
Unless he just knew about it and chose to keep it to himself, it's kind of fucked up. But I agree. I don't think that's it. I mean, it does line up very almost succinctly, but unless he quickly reshot the film, I mean, the movie was delayed multiple times, so but I don't think A24 would have let him reshoot giant portions of the movie.
It's just, it's not, you know, that's not really plausible, right? And not because of that, it's just like, logically, it doesn't make any sense. I think, you know.
Especially, I think they also said the script was written like shortly after It Follows had come out. So like, I think he was already writing the script. Beforehand, so
in terms of quality, okay, to me, here's an SAT question for you.
Okay,
It Follows is to Under the Silver Lake what Donnie Darko is to Southland Tales. Okay.
Okay.
Because we have something that is so, so well put together, so well thought out, so expertly executed, right? Uh-huh. And then we follow it with like stream of consciousness, like, you know, if they liked this, then they'll like this dialed up, right? And
right.
And it's like, no, not really. I kind of liked that you were sort of, you know, reserved a little bit more. You know, It Follows, I think, is amazing. I think it's one of the best horror films to come out in 20 years. Right?
Do you think that's why he's making a sequel called They Follow?
I kind of think he's going to ruin it. So, like, because, I mean, the ending was so perfect. And have you seen it? It Follows?
I know about it. That movie had come out right before I had my newfound appreciation for horror.
Okay.
So it came out and I was like, ooh, too scary. and now I'm like, okay, maybe I should see it, especially now that the hype has kind of died down.
Sure.
But I know that it's essentially his sort of take on a quote unquote, you know, the underlying message is STDs.
Well, not really, but you know, it seems like that on the surface, but it really isn't. And but whatever.
Anyway,
but this,
so I know of it.
Yeah. So this, you know, is just so confounding because it's just so much more, you know, and it's like,
and here's my two cents and kind of what I've gathered from some of the videos I've watched, and hopefully Future Rain will credit the videos in the description, because trying to plan out, I'll say for Future Rain, trying to plan out timing wise, when to be like, oh, click up here. No, just put them in the description. Anyway, I did the thing I really liked, and I think I could see why you didn't, the execution, I think, was off, is I like that he was trying, that David Robert Mitchell was trying to say, you know, we've all been sort of pawns in a larger scheme kind of thing, you know, because one video I watched, you know, talks about Sam's sort of obsession with Nirvana and Kurt Cobain. And then when he learns from the songwriter, which I want to save that for a little bit, but when he meets with the songwriter and the songwriter tells him, oh yeah, I wrote Smells Like Teen Spirit. Essentially your childhood is a lie. I think that's what could have made the movie better. If he would just kind of nixed the conspiracy subplot or the rich person subplot and just focused on the everything you've known is a lie kind of thing. Yeah. I think that would have made for a better movie.
I agree because I mean, we have real world context for that sort of idea, right? I mean, we were taught, and I'm sure they're still teaching, that, you know, Columbus invented or discovered America, and that Edison invented the light bulb. And, you know, it's like that's not true, right? Mm-hmm. So like with the older you get and when you find these things out, you're sort of pissed because it's like, you know, why tell me that? Just tell me the truth, right? Like, I don't understand, you know. So in this case, though, it's things that you like, right? So it's art that you connect with and that you feel is a part of you on a personal level, right? And so it is interesting if you were to find out that the thing that you love that is an extension of yourself is all a lie. Well, then who are you, right?
Right.
Which is interesting. But they don't really spend a whole lot of time on that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like after he kills the songwriter with Kurt Cobain's guitar, the video I watched said, like, you know, he doesn't even care that it's broken now because he's sort of like, you know, freeing himself from that. But I'm like, I just think it kind of fell apart. Like, I mean, yeah, I would agree that he doesn't care anymore about Kurt Cobain, but I just think, like, after he killed the songwriter, it's like, well, that's done.
So weird. I know. It almost felt like a dream sequence. Like, it didn't really happen because it's never mentioned again, nor is there any consequences for it. You know, no one's after him for doing that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But sort of like, so why is it there at all? Besides knowing that he is just, you know, he's succumbed to the lie just like everyone else has, right? He's he's just a sucker just like everyone else who buys an album or goes to see a movie, right? And that it's all just a big joke on you and on me and on everybody.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. There's also like a critique or a sort of, I don't know, the homelessness, right, is also a subplot in this where Sam says something nasty about that homeless guy, and yet he's just about to be homeless also. You know what I mean? Like, he's also basically homeless.
Yeah, and it's like, is he saying it because he believes it, or is he just saying it because he's next to, like, a rich person?
Right. Or, you know, yeah, a rich person and an attractive person, right?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the way she dies in the lake is the same pose as the cover of the Playboy magazine.
Yeah.
I don't know if you got that.
No, I got that.
No. Okay.
I got that.
His relationship with women is gross.
One of the videos I watched very early on, you know, talked about Sam being a misogynist. I'm glad you brought that up. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, that he almost kind of lusts after Sarah, and he only met her once.
Because she's an object, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and same with, you know, when he, I'm assuming, has sex with that shooting star girl. You know, he sees her as sort of like an object of desire.
Right.
You know, which of course, when I was watching the movie, I guess I must have missed that. And then when I watched that analysis, I was like, oh yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah. He's like, he sees them as objects and sort of less than, which I think is why women are screaming at him or whatever, or, you know, sort of butting up against him that he hears barking, right? Again,
well, and
he's the dog killer. So,
well, and in one of the videos I watched said that it's when there's a woman who's more powerful than him.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes more sense.
In his head, he has to lessen them to dogs.
Right, 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 right. Because again, he feels smaller, so he needs to put someone else down so he can feel more superior. And that makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we probably should have said this early on. I don't think we're meant to relate to Sam.
No, I don't think so either.
At all.
We don't. Yeah, we don't like Sam. I don't.
Well, I lied a little bit. There was one scene I'd seen in this movie, and it's when he beats the fuck out of those kids.
Oh yeah.
Because I saw a video like on like Facebook or whatever, and it was all like, if Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man had been taken over by Venom, this would be it. And I was like, yeah, I kind of agree.
You know, honestly, it was the most connected I ever felt to Sam was when he was beating up those kids.
I know, and he like jams the raw egg in one of their mouth. Like, dude, I was like, damn, that's hardcore.
Yeah, I mean, they had it coming.
They scratched up his 2011 Mustang.
Yeah, it was sweet.
Oh yeah, sidebar. okay, I guess now I have, this will be the third little qualm I have with the movie.
Okay.
I didn't like that we weren't getting a lot of information up front. Like, I don't want to be spoon-fed information, but like, I want to at least know if either A, there is no time frame, or B, if there is, please tell me early on. I don't want to find out through exposition. Like, how we find out like 45 minutes in, it's 2011. Because I was like, that's weird. Why is he using an iPhone 4? This should be like, this is like 2018. That should be like a 7 or an 8. Mm-hmm. And then later on, someone says something about like, oh, well, you know, 2011. I was like, oh, that makes sense now. And then,
well, he's Sam, good at that, Mitchell, he's, it follows, takes place in a very ambiguous time, with what they're watching on TV, the clothes they're wearing, the music they're listening to, the device that they have. Like, this girl has a phone, but it looks like a clam shell, like a literal clam, right? But it also looks like a Kindle that she can move up in. It's so bizarre, and it's there. It works because it puts you in a place where you're unfamiliar, right? You have nothing to grasp to that can comfort you, that's familiar, right?
Right.
You're always on edge. Here, I agree. That's sort of like, that was, yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. But anyway, you know, it. But yeah, Sam, and I watched one video that the reason why Sam sort of takes up the case to find Sarah is that they theorize that he's not originally from LA, and moving to LA didn't really work out the way he thought it would. So he kind of reverted back to his like childhood ideas. So that's why he has an original Nintendo and NES, and gravitated more to the things that were familiar and comforting. Because like the games he plays, he wants to be the hero. And that's why he tries so hard to find Sarah, because he wants to be the hero. And if I'm the hero and I get the girl, then my life will be complete.
Yeah.
Oh, and one more thing with information that we receive so fucking late. The fact that he just went through a breakup. There's 45 minutes left in the fucking movie and we learn that. Are you kidding me?
It might have been alluded to earlier on, but again, it's so buried with other things that are going on that, you know, you, either you forget or it was just intermingled with other information. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, because like when he sees her at the party, when he sees his ex at that party, I knew instantly, like, oh, the movie wants us to pay attention to her. But who the fuck is she?
Yeah.
And then when he says it, it clicked with me, because he was like, oh, I saw your billboard. And I was like, oh, yeah, there was that really weird contacts billboard.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is like, where the fuck was this information at the beginning of the goddamn movie?
Yeah, there's the setup for this thing is sort of weak, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's the, okay. Because then we haven't even discussed the music, that band, and like the ciphers and the hidden messages within the songs, which will get us to the songwriter. But it's like,
yeah, this like cult band, Jesus and the Brides of Dracula.
Yeah, cool name though.
Like,
I mean, killer. Like, don't you hate it? So. I think about this all the time. That name, you can no longer have that name, right? Like, if you're starting a band, like, you're like, God damn it, they used it in that fictional movie with that band that doesn't really exist, and they wasted it. Such a good name, you know?
Can I be honest? The first time they say it out loud in the movie, all I could think of is, man, if Rob Zombie saw this movie, he'd be like, fuck, that's good.
That's a good name. I know.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, that could have been a horror movie starring my wife, and now they used it.
Oh my dude, yes, that would have been so he would have I mean it probably wouldn't have critics probably would have hated it, but like yes. I think he could have yeah.
Agreed.
but yeah, yeah, so this culty band that Sam eventually kind of by happenstance figures out that there's a hidden message in like their like number one song.
Yeah.
I will say I did laugh when he's beating the shit out of Jesus.
Yeah.
And he's crying and his like mascara is running. It made me laugh so hard. Cause you think like you see him and he looks like probably someone you shouldn't, I'm not doing a thumbs up. Stop that. but like throughout the film, you see Jesus and you think that maybe he's like a guy you shouldn't fuck with, but he just crumbles almost immediately.
Yeah.
And Sam's not even the most intimidating guy, yet somehow he knows how to like twist his arm, literally twist his arm.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah. Also, I didn't really care that David showed us what was in the toilet.
I
like
could have done without it myself.
I was like, I don't want to see that.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Like, and not to say that it grossed me out, but I was just like, I don't want to see that. Like in a film like Miss March, since we were talking about Trevor Moore at the beginning, when he wakes up his friend from a coma and he like shits himself, that was funny. I didn't care for like that was like that didn't bother me.
Sure,
because you know he just woke up from a coma, so obviously he doesn't know how to control his bowels. But like it just. I was like, no, again, why?
It's not like read the room. Like this isn't the right context for this. This isn't like the tone we're going for. I agree.
Yeah, especially because he wrote the line for the actor to say, "I'm taking a shit here," so yeah. We know what he's doing. So why show it? But
yeah,
I digress. Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So yeah, he again, kind of by happenstance, figures out the code. Which then leads him to the songwriter, which apparently, I don't know if you found this in your research. Apparently everyone has agreed. This is the best sequence in the entire movie.
It's the most interesting for sure. And it's like, it's the most, how would I put it? I understand this concept better. person that makes all of these songs that's sort of like this otherworldly figure that seems to be impossibly old and you know and has written all of these songs. I get this. I understand this better and I understand the concept. I understand what they're trying to do here and we spend such little time on it and it never really becomes important again.
Yeah. Well, because I think the message, because you've already said kind of what that whole sequence was about. I think the message was you could kill the songwriter, but the song is still there.
Yeah.
It's still going to get listened to. It's still going to get played.
Yeah.
It's still going to get bought. So it's like Sam killing him was for nothing.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, this guy had over, you know, hundreds of years of catalog, you know, since he claims that he wrote Beethoven's sixth or something like that. So. You know, it's yeah. So I think it was just one of those things where it was like, well, Sam, even though you killed him, it's not going to stop the messages getting out there. Now, I will say, I do wish we had a little bit more. Like, I wish he would have given Sam like another kind of cryptic answer when Sam asked him who pays you to write the songs. But
yeah because like we. Like this is just another dead end because like he doesn't even know. Right? The songwriter's like, I don't know. You know, like it's above him. And it's like, then what are we doing?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Just one of the few things, a few mysteries that never get an answer. Like the owl's kiss. Like that was a really cool, like supernatural kind of force in the film that I really liked. And then she gets scared because Sam turns around and he's got a gun on her. Like, the film has already told us how dangerous she is, and like, what?
Yeah. Before you just mentioned it, I completely forgot about that.
To be honest, it's one of the few supernatural things of this movie that I was like, in theory, I really like that.
Yeah.
But you know, cause that I was okay with not getting an answer to.
Sure.
Now I wanted some resolution with it, but I was okay with not knowing like if this was real or not. Cause it did kind of creep me out when Sam's looking through, he's credited as comic fan. Mm-hmm. When he's looking through his footage and mm-hmm. she looks up at the camera. Yeah. That yeah. fucking freaked me out. But then like all this buildup, she comes to kill Sam and then gets scared because he's got a gun. And like, it just.
I know it's, I know because you just, I just want something. I want something to grab. I want something to be answered, or I want something to go somewhere. Right. I think the only really ending we get is finding Sarah and what she's doing and mm-hmm. who she's doing it with. I think that, you know, like, and a part of me understands the point of, well, the songwriter doesn't know because it's above him, which means it's probably above the person above that person and above them and above them. And it just goes on forever. Right. There's always someone pulling the strings. Right. Mm-hmm. I get that. And I think if it were presented in a different way, I would like that. Or if these supernatural or surrealist elements were played a little differently, or I don't know, there's a way to do that pirate guy that I think I'd like, but I just didn't care. Or, well,
you know,
it seemed too silly.
You know, but like, but then like there's the homeless king, which I was like, well, yeah. I'm all in, dude. Like, this is so surreal. I'm in. Let's do this.
Sure.
But like, yeah, I agree. The pirate guy, I'm like we're meant to think he's important because he keeps popping up.
Mm-hmm.
But
he's a red herring, right?
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. The only resolution this film gives us is for Sam, who, again, we're not supposed to relate to him, but David still gives him sort of a, I wouldn't say a happy ending, but an ending where he sleeps with his topless neighbor, which I guess is to, I don't know, but he's sort of kind of thrown off this, the whole conspiracy and like choosing to, I guess, ignore it now.
Maybe you're just like, let it go, or just realize that there's nothing you can do about it. Right.
Yeah.
Because again, he's not thrust into this thing to solve anything. He just knows about it. Right.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I like it. Right. I don't hate that, you know, our main character finds a conspiracy, follows it to the very end, but can't do anything about it. Like, he just knows, and then that's it, right? Knowing doesn't matter either, right? Knowing doesn't change anything.
Yeah, because, you know, as what he's learned is, even if he were to talk about it, he would probably get killed, so better just keep his mouth shut.
I suppose. Or even just, like, no one would care, I think.
Yeah, which I think, yeah, I think that would be, yeah, no one would care. Now, I want to offer you something, Jeremy, because as we've been talking about like the surreal elements and like the fact that, you know, David Robert Mitchell is trying to show us like the seedy underbelly of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got, hang on. What was his name? You said his name, the comic fan guy.
Oh, yeah. Patrick Fischel.
Yeah. Patrick Fischel. I had this thought. What if David Robert Mitchell was trying to pull sort of a Lynchian move on everyone, but rather my theory being Lost Highway, what if it was Mulholland Drive?
I mean, Patrick Fischel is in Mulholland Drive.
That's the other reason, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't, like, the things we've been talking about, you know, like the mystery element of it, you know, because there is a mystery element to Mulholland Drive. But the only, but the big difference is, which we talked about in our Mulholland Drive episode, everyone go check that one out. Lynch technically gives us an answer to Mulholland Drive.
Yeah. Yeah, there's an answer to be solved, and there probably is here as well, especially with the ciphers and the codes and all of that. I mean, even in the movie, within the plot, Sam is reading the same codebreaker book that Robert Graysmith reads in Zodiac, you know. Maybe.
Well,
but here's the thing, is I don't care enough to figure it out. And I think that's the problem. And listen, I am in possibly the minority here, because while looking up this movie and doing some research on it, people fucking love this movie. All right?
Yeah. Yeah.
People are obsessed with it. They love it. They think it's a masterpiece. Okay? And I'm not here to say that they're wrong, because they're probably not. I'm wrong. Maybe. Because... again, it's fun to like things. I just didn't jive with this. You know what I mean? Like, I maybe when I was 15 and this came out, I'd be obsessed, probably. You know, that's the type of movie watcher I was then. I was trying to find subversive movies that I could really sink my teeth into and, you know, carry with me for a long time. And I think this would have been perfect for that. Now, I guess, I don't know. I just don't care. It just seems like too much work to sit there and go through the ciphers and all that, you know?
Well, I'm about to blow your mind real quick.
Okay.
One last video I watched talked about how if Sam had been just paying more attention, he probably could have figured it out a lot quicker.
Okay.
Which is, you know, the first of all, the movie there he's watching with Sarah, How to Marry a Millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
That's the plot right there. Secondly, I don't remember the code, but like her dolls,
yes,
you know, have like that. Clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have that Zodiac cipher.
Mm-hmm.
But then the biggest one, which blew my mind, is the fireworks are in Morse code.
Oh, are they?
And it said, and apparently someone was able to figure it out. It says ascend now.
Interesting.
So it was almost like they were telling Sarah, hey, like it's time.
Interesting.
And so had Sam been, so the main point of the video was if Sam had been paying attention and wasn't a misogynist and wasn't trying to, you know, obsessed over Sarah, if he'd been paying attention, he probably could have figured this out a lot quicker.
Listen, man, I don't consider myself a misogynist, but I don't know Morse code either. So
neither do I. Neither do I.
I think that's cool, right? That's super interesting. And I like the fact that, you know, he's, you know, Mitchell's putting stuff in there that is solvable, that enhances your experience after the fact. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't care.
Okay.
Which
one other thing I want to discuss. Okay. So why do you think Sam is the dog killer?
I think Sam is a dog killer because we know a lot about the dog killer just through him and through like the comic books and that story of the actor who, you know, killed that show business dog. And then his thing with, you know, the strong women, he hears barking, you know, he says something about his dog dying. but we don't have evidence that he ever had a dog, at least in the movie context. Like we, there's no setup where he had a dog, right? But he tells Sarah that he had a dog, but it died while he's playing with her dog.
But that also could have been a lie.
I know. I just don't see any other reason why it would be in the movie if he wasn't the dog killer.
And this isn't just because I'm not trying to say like I'm trying to redeem Sam. I just don't think he is. Just because I really, because David Robert Mitchell made him unlikable already. Like, it's like, why do we need to then find out that he kills dogs? You know, I mean, like, yeah, like there is a lot of evidence, like what you're just saying. And, you know, the fact that he just carries around dog biscuits with him. Which, of course, we learn when the homeless king ties him up is that it was his coping mechanism to that if he ever gets his ex back, that he can, you know, give the dog a cookie and, you know, and then things will be fine again. So that's what I'm choosing to believe. I just think it was this breakup, I guess, was just that bad that it fucked him up. And he, you know, thinking that if he carries around these dog treats, then it would all be fine. I think the identity of the dog killer, it's one that I didn't need an answer to, but I'm like 90% certain that's who was following him home that night, you know?
Okay.
When he gets sprayed by the skunk.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I don't know, because there's so many unanswered questions. Which, you know, like, unlike Lynch, when Lynch gives us an unanswered question, like I don't want to know. But with this one, according to everything I've read about it, all the videos I've watched, apparently, and kind of what you've been saying, it is solvable. And so I'm just like,
Is my understanding that it's solvable? I mean, like, you know, there's a puzzle, so I mean, might as well. And like you said, I mean, there's evidence to suggest that, you know, like the fireworks are Morse code, and then, you know, the ciphers on the dolls, and, you know, it's solvable. And perhaps, like, if I were to have paused and taken a picture of the homeless symbol guide, I probably could have had more clues and could have figured more stuff out. Maybe, you know, but to me, the dog killer stuff is like, it's kind of like when you're watching old school Scooby-Doo's, it's like they've met three people in this episode. Who's more likely to be the one in the mask? You know what I mean? Like, it can only be one of those three people. Right. So it's like, we're just with Sam the whole, it's probably him. Like, I don't know. Like, we keep talking about it and we're, you know, sticking with him and we're not revisiting other people necessarily. I don't know. Yeah. Like, or it's just nonsense. But why? You know?
Yeah.
This movie's
confusing. Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, even with my qualms, I still like the movie. You know, I think maybe one day I'll sit down and I'll try to solve it. Or who knows, maybe I'll just rewatch it and just try to find things I missed. But sure. That for real is a future Rain problem.
If we're wrapping up, an Oops, I Forgot.
Oops, I Forgot?
An Oops, I Forgot is another film homage. Is Riley Cohen, the swimming pool, is taken from the unreleased Marilyn Monroe film that they were working on when she died. It's nearly shot for shot. What Riley Cohen does is what Marilyn Monroe does in the pool, which I liked.
Now, out of curiosity about that film, Marilyn Monroe's film, were they almost done with it before she died, or
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think they were probably just in the middle of it, maybe. I don't know. I just know that there's not enough to be released for like a finished product. So, yeah, I don't remember what it was called either, but you can find it online.
My Oops, I Forgot, real quick. I really like when we first meet Sarah well, actually, like, Sam meets her for the first time, we get sort of that noir, harsh light across her face.
Yes, across her eyes. Yes.
Yeah, across her eyes. I was, and I even told Ashley, I was like, that's very noir. I was like, now this is neo-noir. And she's like, I don't care. Shut up.
You should have said it's very Morticia Addams, because they do the same thing in the Addams Family.
Yeah.
It's very Angelica Houston, Morticia Addams.
Yeah. Dude, shout out to Angelica Houston.
Sure.
Alrighty, so I think we've done a sufficient wrap up, and we did our oops, I forgot. If you want to watch this movie, everyone, it's on Max. For now, I think I think A24 just signed like a deal with Max to put their movies up on streaming on Max.
I did see there's Priscilla's on there.
Yeah,
there's a bunch on there.
But. So, buddy, what's going to be your final pick for the season?
It's a good question.
Which I already know what it is.
I know you do. Okay. So, this is a movie I saw many years ago. And I saw it probably around the time it came out, maybe a year after. I either saw a trailer for it, or maybe I saw it on Netflix, maybe. But I saw it and I immediately loved it. And I thought, this is one of the greatest revenge films I've ever seen. And I hope this filmmaker does more stuff. And he did. And it's all great. Next week, we are discussing Jeremy Saulnier's Blue Ruin. Starring Mac and Blair, who is not related to me, but is, I wish, who's in a lot of Saulnier's. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I'll figure it out before next week. He's also in The Green Room. More recently, he was in Oppenheimer as Oppenheimer's counsel during that that private deposition. So Mac and Blair plays this guy who gets out of prison and then goes out for revenge, and it's so hyper realistic. It's patient. It's amazing. I love Blue Ruin. So something to look forward to for next week.
Nice. Yeah. And also many people might, if they do know, our buddy Alex did a short film, and I think he copied the
poster.
The poster.
I think you might have done so. Yes.
Yeah. If not, I mean, it's eerily similar. Yeah, man, I'm excited because I know you told me that this movie's insane, so
I love it.
I'm excited to check it out.
Oh, good. Yeah.
One final thing before we close out, everyone. We are swiftly approaching our 200th episode. Jeremy and I have already been discussing what we're going to do. We got something, I think, pretty cool planned.
I think so.
It's going to have to come down to... timing, but I think y'all will enjoy the 200th episode.
I think so.
Relative to this recording, when this episode comes out, we'll be 3 episodes away, so be on the lookout for that, everyone.
Definitely.
Yeah. But until that time, everyone, we hope you enjoyed this episode on Under the Silver Lake, and we will see you next week for Blue Ruin.